Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
Hey there, Nomad of Nowhere fans. Welcome back to the Wasteland here on AfterBuzz TV. We are talking about Season 1, Episode 8, End of the Line of Nomad of Nowhere. Guys, we're going to be breaking down the episode, talking about how savage Scout can be, how scary Toro's champion looks, and of course, we're going to be talking about some nearsighted bandits. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
So, I'll be honest, I can never remember the name of this band. The Doobie Boys, right?
Doobie Brothers.
Doobie Brothers. See, in my head...
Now, the Doobie Boys are on Twitch. They stream Call of Duty and Fortnite exclusively.
My parents went to go see them in concert when I was a kid, and I couldn't for the life of me remember what band they were seeing. So I was like, who are you going to see tonight? The Goobie Boys? And they were like, the Doobie Brothers!
The Weed Siblings.
And they were so disappointed in me. I feel like they wanted to disown me right then and there.
This is fun fact for those of you listening. If you can find the deconstructed version of this song that gives you every audio track on a different level, lets you listen to it, and then puts it all together, this song is amazing.
I mean, it's a great song just in and of itself. I feel like you don't have to deconstruct it to see that, but really cool.
It's even when you hear all the individual layers and be like, oh, it's got this. Oh, it's got this little guitar bit. Oh, it's got this. And then when you put them all on top of each other, you can hear them all. Oh,
that's so cool. But, like, speaking of deconstructing, hey there, Nomad of Nowhere After Show fans! We are going to be breaking down tonight's episode. Let's not waste any time. Let me go ahead and introduce my fantastic panel. To my left, Mark Donica.
That's me.
To his left, Katie Cullen.
Where would you be right now? And to my left,
I'm Megan Salinas. Sadly, Stacey Shuttleworth could not be here tonight, but you guys can follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Stacey Shuttles and tweet her your well wishes. She's a little under the weather, so please send her your well wishes. We hope she makes a speedy recovery and gets well soon. So, guys.
Nice fade, Steve.
That
nice.
Was excellent. Yeah. That was excellent. So, guys, this was a really fun episode for me. We had a lot of great character interactions. We got some really great comedy bits. What did you guys think of this episode?
My brain is just a loop going, train heist, train heist, train heist. Those are always so much fun.
I was a big fan of it because it was a dialogue heavy episode.
Yeah.
And I knew that we weren't going to get anything like we got the Undertaker the first part of the season, but I was wondering how we were just going to have the Nomad sit there and accept dialogue, and we got it. All about it.
It's always interesting seeing how people interact with the Nomad and how they essentially have one-sided conversations that aren't necessarily one-sided. So, yeah, it's always interesting seeing how those character dynamics sort of play out. And sometimes it's terrifying, as you mentioned, with the Undertaker. And sometimes it's kind of a moment of self-reflection for whoever happens to be talking to him. I feel like we got a lot of that this episode.
I do love that just about everyone who has had extended conversations with the Nomad also speaks Nomad, as it were, is very proficient with his particular brand of charades.
I'm wondering if they can hear the sound effects. That's what I wonder. Like, it's very cartoony and it's clearly for the audience, but I don't believe that every head turn is like a meh, meh. Like, I fully suspect that that's not what it is, but that's probably what it is.
I guess, yeah, that's a huge question about whether or not the sounds that we hear from the Nomad are diegetic or non-diegetic.
That's a word of the day. What's up?
That's a filmmaking word right there.
That's like, what, 64 points on a Scrabble board?
I have no idea. Mostly because I couldn't either. Tell you how to spell diegetic.
D-I-A-G-E-T-I-C, probably.
I can't dispute you on that fact. I'm a winner.
It's not like you have the Library of Alexandria in front of you.
Nobody does.
Are you saying this magic box could tell me the answer?
I can. I'm telling you, many magic boxes can tell you answers. Shout out to the Doobie Brothers.
And speaking of these magical boxes in front of us that can tell us just about everything, if you guys are watching us live, Mark Donica has you guys covered on the live chat.
I'm covered.
And we are going to be keeping an eye on the hashtag RTReviews per the usual. So guys, we want to hear your comments about the episode we're covering tonight. And also, before we get started, we have a quick announcement for you all.
Nice.
Hey, AfterBrothers.
AfterBrothers.
That one wasn't even intentional.
It's staying, though. It's staying. It's infecting the entire animation channel. We are all After Bros now.
We're all After Brothers now. Hey, After Bros. Our network produces after shows for nearly all of your favorite TV shows, from drama, reality TV, sci-fi, and more. There is no network that works harder to serve television fans, but we need your help. We're asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. By subscribing to our channel, YouTube will suggest content that's tailor-made for you, and you'll help AfterBuzz continue to grow. And if you're worried about those pesky notifications, don't be, because they're optional. So hit that subscribe button for now for this channel, and check out our other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. Let us know you did so in the comments, and we'll thank you on air. For now, thanks for being the best fans and for helping us be the ESPN of TV talk.
We have
it says on our lovely cups.
Which are not for sale. But we had one comment from last week, which was from Not a Troll 4, I believe them. Mark, that theory was cruel and horrifying. Keep it up. Yes. We'll talk about more about that eventually.
We are still keeping it only to episode 8. We are not talking about episode 9, so please keep chat, hashtag, etc. spoiler free for the people who don't have First memberships or Verve memberships, and for those of you who don't, get one.
And we do have an update from Eddie Rivas in chat, writer of Nomad of Nowhere, regarding Diegetic. The Nomad's insulin levels are fine.
Ooh.
That's a play on words. Because Diegetic sounds like diabetic.
Diabetes.
You've been working too hard on that railroad.
Oh Lord in heaven. All right, so yeah, let's go ahead and get to it. Before we go to the train station, I want to instead hop on over to Toth and the rest of the Dandelions.
Please get the soundboard ready. We're gonna need it.
Toth has been, ever since parting ways with Scout, she has been even more relentless in her pursuit of the Nomad, to the point where it sounds like they've been traveling for days without rest, because Jethro seems to be at his absolute wit's end.
Well, he's, being a masseur, it's, you have to exude even more physical energy to help other people feel relaxed. He's probably the most tired because he's been doing work for two.
Not to say
that he's pregnant, but nervous 30. So he would be more tired because I think he puts himself out there for the others a little bit more. But then again, we don't know about the rest of the group too much.
I also do love this little back and forth. I love when these three talk. They just, they're our little chorus, they're our audience XPs, they're wonderful human beings, and I adore them all. Just the back and forth about, when will we stop? When she feels the hole in her soul, we're doomed! Like, it's those little, you kind of expect it, it's a comedy staple, but it still plays very well. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that a lot.
Bringing that up, I want to present this question to the table. Guys, what could fill the hole in Toth's heart?
Well, it's scout shaped.
I mean,
and we're done.
It's a very specific shape with her hair and everything like
that. Having a better HR department and a boss who isn't terrible? Actual job satisfaction?
Would
maybe?
It be the sweet taste of victory?
Probably not.
No.
How can you reach the top, but if there's nobody to share it with, what's the point?
That's very true.
Yeah.
Or is there a bit of the puzzle we're not seeing? Because, again, she's doing all of this for the Yadala. Mm-hmm. Is there someone back home that maybe is causing the void within her heart?
There are probably multiple someones, let's be real.
Causing the void.
What?
What a sentence. I know we got a little bit from Null at the first part of the season about the Yadala, and we haven't really gotten too much since. And I'm kind of expecting like a gotcha, like real quick, maybe episode 11, we might get one little tidbit before the finale, or we might see the power, quote, the power of the Yadala before the end of the season, at least to give us a breadcrumb.
I think maybe the old lady that we saw in El Rey in that episode, I feel like she might make another appearance before the season's out.
I do think she was a hallucination.
Assuming she was real.
Yeah.
I think that she was a future echo of Toph.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Ooh.
I feel like that's a really good... I love the idea of this series playing with time. Not like... There are some series where I feel like once they hit the point of time travel, I'm like, you have to be very, very careful when it comes to time travel because it's so easy for your storyline to get muddled. Mm-hmm. But I feel like with sort of the little seeds that have been planted throughout, if this series wanted to go the route of time manipulation, I feel like this series would be okay with that, just given the little bits and pieces that we've got. Although we could be completely off base with that. That could be a super outlandish theory.
Please clap, says the old Yadala lady was definitely a force ghost. I'm
possibly
down. I'm in. I like that. I really do think that she was some sort of magical echo left behind, given that this seemed to be El Rey's former digs.
Yeah, she might not be a future Toth. She could very well be an ancestor of Toths. So, or yeah, maybe no relation at all. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, not all Yadala are related.
Jeez. Yeah, we shouldn't go making assumptions like that. But you know, and we don't want to be too predictable when it comes to sort of the way we cover things. And speaking of predictable, Red Manuel.
Shut up, Red Manuel.
Thank you. I need that as my ringtone.
I'll send it to you.
Thank you. Yeah. That's I'm going to replace Reinhardt yelling catchphrase with Tom Farragon saying, shut up, Red Manuel, every time my phone goes off.
Red Manuel is driving everyone insane.
I feel like if Red Manuel just disappeared off the face of the planet, everyone would be happier. Nobody likes Red Manuel except Red Manuel.
Nobody's asking Red Manuel how he feels.
Nobody cares.
And isn't that a problem?
No.
Mark, do you think he's capable of self-reflection?
I do. No. I think Red Manuel is capable of self-reflection, but he's going to keep referring to himself in the third person as he does it.
Does Red Manuel deserve to make his way out of this one?
Well, it's one of those things where in a lot of popular shows, we don't necessarily know the background of a quote villain or an anti-hero or whatever, but usually it's the episode where we get the explanation that fans absolutely adore and love. And Red Manuel, jerk, total jerk. I would say b-hole. But at the very least, sorry, kids, I know this is a family show. But I think that everybody has the possibility for redemption.
Please clap says, Red Manuel likes Red Manuel enough for everyone else.
Sure, I mean, if nobody loves him, he's got to make up for that.
Aww.
So I'm not saying that I've turned a corner and I enjoy Red Manuel, because I agree with everybody when I say...
Shut up, Red Manuel.
So, but I appreciate what his character represents and what it's supposed to do, but I don't think I'm sticking with my prediction from last episode.
Julio Catalan says he's the Starscream.
I mean, you're not wrong. I very much like that comparison.
Bless.
He constantly wants to usurp the person in charge. He's so self-absorbed. Probably wears heels really well.
He's loud, annoying, and ostentatiously colored. Talking about like the red everything.
ELS Gaming says, do you think we'll get a blue Manuel? Probably not.
Azul Manuel!
Manuel Azul.
Yes! That's his brother. That's his twin. Who actually, like, instead of, he's the evil twin, and his brother is
the nice guy. Clean shaven, short hair, like no accent.
Respectful and polite.
Manuel Azul. Pleasure
carries
to meet
a guitar.
You.
He's the bard of the party.
Though technically, if you think about it, Red Manuel and Don Paragon are kind of the exact opposite of each other.
That's very true.
Both in design and in performance and presentation.
And yet they're both equally arrogant and narcissistic. It's I would say not so much the opposite of one another, but they are like two sides of the same coin, if that makes any sense. I very much like that.
Tia Polito says, Azul Manuel is just Don Perignon.
Yeah.
Well.
Exactly.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
I think we need that sound clip one more time before we move on, if you'd be
so
kind.
Shut up, Red Manuel.
Yes, thank you.
It makes me
so
happy.
And now we can't use it anymore, because that's the rule of
three. Rule of three. That's comedy for you guys. So before we hop away from them and... a possible moment of self-reflection for Red Manuel. Instead, we get to see they come across El Toro's champion, who doesn't really take any notice of them. Now, I was very surprised when we were introduced to El Toro. What did you guys think of El Toro's champion?
Just Toro? Well, his name is Toro.
His
he's not
is
the
Toro?
Bull. He's just Toro.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
I think he likes to think of himself as
I got you.
El Toro.
I got you, Finn. I was a little surprised that, like, last week you had mentioned, oh, I can't wait to see what kind of design he's going to have. He's just a dude. Like, I don't think, like, in this episode we saw a lot of the terrifying things that he can do and feats of strength and things of that nature, but I don't think we've seen the worst of it.
Yeah, he's extremely strong. It's, you know, it takes a lot to derail a train. Basically.
Mm. Honest to goodness, my knee-jerk reaction, he came on screen and I went, Doomfist?
Like, a little bit.
He doesn't have the right arm, but he looks a lot like Doomfist. I'm just like, okay, that's a similar design, so okay, cool. And then I really, really wanted him to suplex the train. The Final Fantasy VI in me won't let it. I think Final Fantasy VI, I'm not sure, just won't let that go.
I'm pretty sure he would have died.
Yeah.
That.
What if he didn't?
But what if he didn't?
It's just a matter of leverage, right?
Yeah. I look at this guy and Mark, as you pointed out, he on the surface he is just a guy, but then you see him rip apart steel beams with his bare hands. So it makes me wonder, what is the Colosseum like if this is their number one combatant?
Mm-hmm. It's literally called the Colosseum. I think the name says it all.
Really quickly, ELS Gaming makes an Achievement Hunter reference. If anybody wants some fun stuff to randomly watch on any... Try to watch their Grand Theft Auto Stop the Train videos. They're really funny. But to me, this champion represents... sort of a flashback to a Disney movie, Who is the Monster and Who is the Man? All of the stuff that people are going through to catch the Nomad is this backwards idea of, well, we have to do anything necessary to stop this terrifying being, when we're seeing everything from the Nomad's perspective. He possibly killed all of these people on the train to get one person that nobody knows anything about other than they have magic. The truly terrifying lengths that the El Rey and cabinet will go to in order to catch this creature is awful. And it's just a dude who's doing all of this stuff, not some roided out magic bull dude. It's just a guy.
Yeah, I feel like we get some really good foreshadowing, and we'll talk about it in a moment when we hop over to the train. But like, when we hear the passersby talking about the reputation that Nomad, you know, the people who are getting left behind in the Nomad's wake, so to speak, you know, I feel like it's really good foreshadowing for our introduction to this guy, because people are talking about how, like, oh man, it's disaster everywhere the Nomad goes. And now we're seeing somebody, you know, this isn't a bunch of kind of silly circus performers, and this isn't one guy in isolation who's hanging out, you know, just in his creepy cabin. This is a guy who will plow through anyone and anything to get to the Nomad. And, you know, coming from the Colosseum, there's going to be zero regard for civilian casualties. And it makes me wonder, again, you know, what are the sort of... It just makes me wonder a lot about Toro's, you know, where, how he governs and where he comes from, and just that entire side of the wasteland, that entire side of nowhere. Like, what does the rest of this world look like if this is what the champion of one of the governors is capable of?
I would imagine it's hell. I still want to see fans and knives.
It's like, I imagine it's like Tron. Anybody who disobeys the rule of law gets sent immediately to the Colosseum. Or no, gets sent to games or something.
Yeah.
To prove.
Yep. To prove their worth or to just eventually get executed and, yeah.
But mostly just for the enjoyment of the people watching and the people that aren't willing to stand up against the tyrant Toro.
Yeah. It's cool thinking that within this, because I don't normally mix my Roman Colosseum sort of storylines with my Western, so it's cool thinking that there is sort of a Roman Colosseum-esque component of this world. That's why fantasy Westerns are so fun.
I mean, it's kind of like a bull riding special, like where yeah. What's the there's a
rodeo.
It's like a fantasy version of a rodeo where you know ultimately it's what people trying not to get killed by a bull and watching them try to survive. That's a rodeo.
That's awesome.
They just deconstructed it and combined it with the Roman Colosseum, or at least I think so. Hi, Eddie. And so now we have this wonderful aesthetic.
That is a brilliant insight. Well done, Mark.
I kind of love that idea. I know I want to go watch a rodeo.
Yeah,
it's been a while. I enjoyed the last one I saw.
Have you guys been to a rodeo in real life?
Yeah,
I don't think I've ever been to one.
Wyoming.
Frontier days.
Sounds like fun. All right. Do we have any final thoughts
I'll take you at some point. I'll drag you up to Wyoming.
That sounds like a long way to go. That sounds expensive.
Depends on where you fly into.
Do we have any other thoughts on Toth and the Dandelions and Toro's champion?
Oh, plenty, but there's not enough time.
Just that moment where she turns to ask Scout what she thinks and Scout's not there.
Mm-hmm.
So it happens when you split the party.
Oh, my heart.
She's the only one who doesn't have her intelligence as a dump stat.
But even more so, So in the last episode, we saw the Archer Dandelion, who's not with the party anymore.
Is he dead?
Currently. But either way, from the very first episode, we saw a whole bunch of this team, and now we're down to four. We're down to our boys. We're down to Santi, Jethro, Null, and Red Manuel. The bare bones of the Dandelions, and probably three of the four of those care the most about the well-being of their general.
I'd say the backbone of the Dandelions.
flowers.
Kind of like the main character, the named characters, basically. I would not be surprised if we had more kind of NPC Dandelions show up out of the blue. Well, where have they been? They've been just off camera.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, you can't animate everyone going everywhere and assuming, oh, she's got like 20 people with her. Well, why are we only showing four?
Well, it's a storytelling thing. It shows how desperate Toth and Paragon are, and possibly we don't know if Paragon's been killing more of them.
This is also possible.
Just like,
not a lot of job security.
You
there.
Didn't come back with anything, so I'm going to kill you too. You three, you're fine. And I think ultimately the discussion in episode one of like how are his hands, what is what kept at least Santi and Jethro alive. We don't know, and Null being a Yadala is possibly what's keeping him alive, but we don't know.
No, we don't. I do like the comparison that you guys made earlier about them being our Greek chorus. It has that sort of storytelling feel to it.
Roman chorus.
Oh,
because we have the Colosseum. That was just stupid.
Country chorus, because it's a rodeo.
Well, before we move on, really quickly, we want to talk to you guys about iTunes. Folks, thank you so much to everybody who's gone to iTunes to rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you, and it's the best way to let our producers know that you guys like the show that we're putting on. It's one of the highlights of my day whenever we get to see a new one, and we do like to give shout-outs to people when you guys leave new comments.
But we're not doing that today, because
nope.
We don't have any new ones. To you.
No, but for real, guys, we really appreciate it. It makes us more searchable. It helps us get guests. It is the bee's knees, so we really appreciate it when you
It's how cast and crew find us.
Yeah. Who knew?
Hi.
Hi, everybody. So, yes, please, if you haven't already done so, or if you have done so and you just haven't done it in a while, please go do the thing. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys so, so much. We love you. All right, let's jump on over to the train. I absolutely adored this entire plot line. There were so many fun visual gags. There was a lot of great dialogue, as you guys pointed out. What do you guys think was the best comedy bit? Because this was definitely a more joke-heavy episode.
The ongoing hostage gag. Mm-hmm. Just, take me hostage, take me hostage! Not like that, and then, that's not what hostages are! Mm-hmm.
That was probably my favorite, too.
The physical bit of not... of the holding of the hands.
Yeah.
And the fact that they were nearsighted bandits, they handed Nomad a sack and they just dishes paper or whatever. Here's a bag of heavy things. And they go, great job.
Oh, and the follow-up. Oh, go ahead.
A Beast Wars fan, and I agree. The old lady being very mean. this is one of those, yes! This is one of those episodes. And I don't know if I said it. I don't know when I said it, but when it comes to new animation projects, it's fun to figure out, oh, when is this regular going to show up? When is that regular going to show up? And in this episode, we got Jen Brown and Lee Eddy, which, yep. Magic. Fantastic.
I wrote in my notes, I wrote Old Lady Jen, and I wrote Bandit Lee Eddy for the win.
Mm-hmm. And Cam Griffin wrote, running from your trouble.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he's a serial killer.
Can we take a minute... to, like, point out how creepy the ticket taker is?
The Undertaker's brother.
Probably! Oh,
they're both takers!
The Underticket.
The Ticket Taker. First name Ticket, last name Taker.
Could we just,
no, like, I got the joke.
Could we just put him in the direct path of the champion? Because, like, I don't want to talk to this guy anymore.
Oh, that's some bad news. He's our new protagonist.
Oh, no!
Running from your troubles. And just the slow head tilt. Of the, can we just...
That dolly shot. That horror dolly shot.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm not actually a train. I feel like at any point some very low violins could have started humming and it would have been right at home hearing next to this guy's dialogue and performance. Well done, but he creeped me the heck out. But as we sort of touched on before, the Nomad's reputation is preceding him. And so much so that there are wanted posters all over this train station. And he does the sort of classic Looney Tunes thing of, like, I'm going to draw mustaches on all of these.
Different mustaches on everyone.
That's so good. Do you guys think at some point he's going to clap and make wanted posters of himself come alive?
I honestly thought that would have been the expedient route, would be just getting rid of the wanted posters. Fly away!
That would have been a little bit more obvious when there's just a little army of signs walking away. The Nomad must have been here, as opposed to, some delinquent just drew on the signs.
That's a good point.
But I think eventually we'll probably see, like, a wanted sign tornado or something.
Just a little army of signs.
I love the idea of, like, there being the wanted sign and the googly eyes popping up right where his eyes are. I love that idea. But yeah, we hear that, like, his reputation isn't necessarily sterling at this point. You know, people are hearing about the Undertaker and about the circus he bankrupted and everything like that. Never really getting the full context of the story of, oh, they were a group of bounty hunters, or, oh yeah, that guy was crazy. He tried to murder a man. No, none of that. So it's sad to think that, like, as he goes along, that reputation is going to be ahead of him and it's going to be harder and harder to get help. Probably. Well,
I keep coming back to this, but that's also very Trigun. Is all you hear about is the $60 billion double-dollar man who blew a hole in the moon and did this and that and the other, and it's never the whole story. It's the juicy bits that fit in with the current narrative that get spread around.
But they're getting spread around. So those events were all isolated. Now that with this train crash, it seems like if anybody survived, hopefully that allows the word to be spread of, oh no, he was running the whole time. He saved us from bandits or whatever. Like, that, he needs to be around people in order for the narrative to start to change.
Yeah. And hopefully, as he continues to do his 100 good deeds for Eddie McDowd sort of thing, hopefully that means that the good word will start to spread. Mm-hmm. But even if not, like, it's kind of fun to think about what sort of legends about the Nomad are going to crop up as he makes his journey across the wasteland.
And if he never makes public appearances, it would be Legends of the Hidden Nomad.
Yes, it would be. Oh, that'd be sweet.
Various silver shrines.
But silver snakes.
Olmec. just imagine a stone statue and he brings it to life and it has the googly
eyes.
It's
got the big googly eyes.
It's all interpretive. It's not, no words. It's just.
I've been watching a lot of Legends of the Hidden Temple. I mean, thanks, Verve.
And that would make the quiz section very, very difficult.
I mean, everyone else can understand the Nomad doing charades. Why not Olmec?
We hop on the train with the Nomad, and that's where Scout recognizes him. After, yes, this very, very mean old lady just sort of scolds her for trying to make conversation.
Yeah.
When the old lady started it. Usually it's, well, you look really sad is an invitation to, why are you sad? It's not just a, like, you look really sad. Bye. Okay, thanks.
Sometimes
Jen.
It's nice to talk to somebody that's not looking too. Hell, you're not doing too well. Hey, you, it's nice just to check in every once in a while.
Sure, like a I'm fine would have sufficed for the old lady.
Oh, that's it, all that she wanted. All yep. that she wanted, but she yep. still was like, okay, are you doing okay? Well, I mean, at least she had the freedom, and it's not like an airplane where you're stuck next to somebody for hours on end. But she's like, nope, I'm out.
I've taken airplane rides in complete silence before. It's
exactly.
The fine. Nomad is like the perfect airplane companion. Like, you know how you go on an airplane, you're just like, I don't want to talk to anybody for this entire flight. Mm. And the Nomad would be perfect. Yeah. He would be the perfect traveling companion.
Good listener.
You could play charades.
Great listener. But yeah, so Scout definitely sees the Nomad, and she basically corners him. Now, this conversation brought out a sort of different side of our sweet Scout. She's, you know, obviously we had a moment in the last episode where things got a little dark for her, but at the end of the day, she's like, oh, curse my tender heart, and couldn't actually doesn't actually have it in her to hurt anybody. Mm-hmm. But in this episode, she's downright savage to the Nomad. She's like, hey, you're gonna get captured and brought to El Rey anyway. Why not help me if it's inevitable? What did you guys think of her sort of like, hey, since this is just a thing that's gonna happen.
Really quickly,
I'm sorry,
you can
please
take
clap,
it.
Killed you can us take both. It. And talking about the Nomad, and you know he's definitely not one of those weirdos that claps when the plane lands. Well, shoot, I think that's chat comment of the night.
And then the plane sprouts googly.
The other one that I love is
all the luggage! Oh, no! Oh,
well, but I mean, the luggage would just unpack itself and then go with the person it's supposed to be with instead of just really long baggage claim.
No, wait. Would the bag come to life, or would each individual item in the bag come to life?
I would say the bag, because we've had the bag in the circus episode come to life, and the hat rather come to life and start spewing money. So it's not necessarily all of the contents within, and I think the Nomad has a say in that.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it when he's collecting for the nearsighted bandits. He's able to make everything in the bag come to life without the bag itself, and then later the bag becomes sentient.
Or is that because of that new mode of light that he just got from helping the eagles?
Who knows? Ooh. We still have no idea what the arc reactor does. So.
Yeah, and that's another thing I sort of wanted to point out in this episode. And we'll get back to Scout's sort of conversation here in a moment, but like, that was something I did want to bring up, is we've been postulating that when he does good deeds, sort of, or when he does good, sort of, just in a general sense, that's when we see the light up in the chest. And that could mean a lot of different things, but I do feel like it has to be something specific, because in this episode, he saves the train from a group of bandits.
But does he save it from crashing?
No, but he does rescue the train from a group of people who are trying to rob the citizens. And we don't happen to see a glowy thing. We don't see the glow happen. So I'm like, okay, so it's not just stopping evildoers or doing what some people, or following the letter of the law. You know, it's not what some people would consider a good deed. I would consider stopping bandits to be a good deed. Mm-hmm. But it makes me think that, okay, it's probably a little bit more specific than just a general good. It's probably like good for the earth, maybe. I don't know.
But I mean, he also got it after beating the ranch hand. So I think your theory about doing good for a specific person or people who know that he's done good holds water.
What if it's leveling up? What if it's the degree of do-goodery that, like,
it's XP.
Like, he's already, yeah. they've already gotten to that level. So the next one is just arbitrarily speaking. All right, you have to save 30 people. All right, now you have to save 50 people, and it just keeps going. Or just as a matter of explanation, not specifically that, but it just the severity of the deed has to go up. Maybe it's all speculation at this point.
The idea of it counting for experience points.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay, so let's get back to Scout, because Scout was really savage in this episode, and I wanted to get your guys' take. Was this, because I was very much taken aback by her attitude towards the nomad in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I like that we got the insight that she thinks that the nomad being captured is an inevitability. The idea of, oh, well, you know, you might be able to continue to evade capture, you might get away, just never even crosses her mind. It's, look, this is a known quantity, this is going to happen one way or another, so you might as well help us along the way.
Maybe. Similarly to how we talked about how Scout was rubbing off on Toth, vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Though, it's like trying to install new software on an old computer. It just doesn't take. So you're just trying, you're trying, but the computer doesn't know what to do with it. So the Scout system is still just like, yeah, this'll do it. But did anybody sense that she had an acceptance of saying, doing all of this won't fix all of your problems, but when I do it, it's going to fix all of my problems? Did anybody think that she had a moment of realization there of, oh, this is the wrong thing to do? Or if it's still just, that was an over-the-head hand gesture for our audio listeners.
I feel like, at least at first, it was very much an over-the-head sort of thing, because I think she's looking at it in a very short-sighted sense of like, yeah, this is bad for...
It got deeper. Oh. It just got deeper by having the short-sighted bandits on the episode where there is some character short-sightedness. Y'all are geniuses. That's to you and everybody watching. We love you.
Oh my gosh. I need to watch what I say.
Layers like onions. Or like punions.
Parfaits.
Oh, Lord.
Best damn food on the whole damn planet.
But yeah, I feel like she's looking at it in the short run. She sees this as an opportunity of like, oh, if I bring you in, since it's going to happen anyway, maybe Toth will love me again. And I feel like, again, if this is something that's coming out of love, you know, it's a bad thing, but it's coming from a place of desperate love, like, she probably goes like, hey, since this is gonna happen anyway, instead of it being a bounty hunter where there's gonna be a lot of collateral damage, you know, you might as well just come with me, we'll just make a beeline there, and, you know, it'll be done. Because I'm sure it's like a little bit of, this'll get me into Toth's good graces, but also, people aren't gonna get hurt anymore.
Yeah.
Because, like, you have put us through all sorts of trouble.
But when will she have the realization that it's not physically the nomad doing all of these things, that they're just trying to do their best because they're the best boy?
I feel like she'll come around if she finds out what El Rey wants to do to this very sweet boy. To this very sweet... possibly three children in a trench coat. I'm not sure. We don't know.
I think she'll come around if she finds out that El Rey's the reason that the magic is gone from everywhere else. Mm. Because right now, El Rey looks like the solution because he's been ruling for 100 years, and that's Yeah.
And it's not in any of the books because history is written by the victors.
Exactly.
Yeah. She's very smart, though. I feel like if she comes to that conclusion, then her attitude will change completely and she will be 100% on the Nomad side.
ELS Gaming, wait. The meta doesn't talk and the Nomad doesn't talk. Therefore, Nomad equals the meta.
Oh, my God.
Just no.
Oh, my God.
Like, I know Eddie did a lot of work on the RVB book. No.
The meta would talk on occasion before he got his throat shot to pieces.
See, that wasn't magic. That was a gun.
He would make weird, like, coffee pot noises.
Coffee club for men.
There were very few times where the meta talked. We haven't seen the Nomad say a word yet.
So yes, that means the meta is 30.
Thank you, Cam Griffin.
Growl, growl.
It all comes full circle.
Is there anything else we want to hit before?
It's the RVB. It's the Rooster Teeth Animated Cinematic Universe.
I feel like the only other thing we want to talk about just is the Nearsighted Bandits. They are so cute. Can I just say,
wouldn't it be better to call yourselves the Blind Bandits? That was a good one.
Way better. And they're short-sighted in their planning, too. It's just all around.
It's short-sighted all across the board. Mm. It makes me really happy that this is the sort of show that we're watching, where bandits, like the Nearsighted Bandits, are sort of like the sort of characters we can expect to see from this show. And it makes me go, like, I won't say exactly what it was, but Elizabeth Maxwell came up with a great idea for a bounty hunter.
I mean, it's
in
public,
the panel.
So
yeah,
you can say,
but go watch the
watch
panel.
Watch it on Mixer.
Go watch it on Mixer. But, like, looking at these Nearsighted Bandits, I'm like, yes, her idea would absolutely fit within this world. Mm-hmm. It'd be perfect. And so, yeah, and anytime we get to hear Lee Eddy, like...
Also, a all-female group of bandits.
Yeah. Wonderful! I freaking love this show so much.
This is a normal robbery on a train.
Oh, these ladies are so fun. I really hope they're not dead. I would love to see them
come back.
I hope
a lot of people aren't dead.
Yeah. That was a lot of collateral damage for one specific.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Fingers crossed.
Credit train. Except for the old lady, though. She's fine.
But, you know,
she's impervious.
Normal humans are acceptable damage. It's fine. It's fine. Everything's fine.
Well, yeah. Do we have any final thoughts on this week's episode before we move into some predictions?
I just circle back to train heist, train heist, train heist. Like, it was a lot of fun.
I'm always down whenever there happens to be a sequence where characters fight on the top of a train. Mm. I am always down for sequences like that.
I'm a fan of science as well. it's weird to think that an episode with a train heist would be sort of a calmer episode than what we're used to, but we were expressly told several times, gird up, because some stuff's gonna be happening, and we're just waiting for it.
Yeah. So on that note, I think we should revel in how funny this episode was. Given that, let's go ahead and dig into some predictions that are unquestionably dark and sad. Mark.
Okay. And we'll reiterate again, just because folks may have come in late, we're not doing spoilers. We're not talking about direct references to next episode because it is out on first, and I even think it's come out on public release.
Friday, I thought.
Okay.
Yeah, we are adhering to Rooster Teeth's community guidelines when it comes to episode coverage, so to speak. So, yes, no spoilers, guys. Yep. All right, Katie. What do you think
is
happening?
Well, it's
kind
of hard
week?
To make predictions having seen next week's episode.
Overall, like,
then
go
further.
Again, I got nothing.
Okay.
I can't formulate something without going into spoiler territory, so I'm abstaining.
I wonder, like we talked earlier about the public reaction to this, because we don't know the severity. If everybody died, this will all be put on the Nomad.
Yeah, absolutely.
If nobody died, will people be willing to talk about it? How heavy is the grip of El Rey, to where people will have the bravery to come forward and say, I don't know why they're looking for this guy. That's what I wonder, because with how blasé Toro was in episode one of like, yeah, this is just kind of the way it goes. Is there anybody out there that's just like, does this have to be the way that this goes? So that's what I'm wondering, is what
the town sort of, that he saved.
What's true, but they all stayed.
Yeah, they're tiny and insular.
And they don't know, there's no water going in or out. So there's not necessarily, and yet some person is still taking a bath probably to this day. But I wonder to what degree this incident will have on the future.
Viva la revolución.
Yeah.
I am standing by the, I feel like, as far as my predictions go, I feel like for the Nomad, we see the glowy bits when he does something specifically to help sort of the earth, to help sort of restore natural balance. That's my particular prediction. And yeah, I absolutely think Scout will come around when she finds out what El Rey's plan is.
Whenever that may be.
Yeah, whenever that may be. If that's... Yeah. Far down the line, if that's, you know, within the next, before the season's out, we shall see.
One word answer. Does anybody think we'll see the Colosseum this season now that we have the champion coming to them?
Hope!
No.
No, hope. Maybe. Hope. I'll say yes, so that there's truly no reason and no actual definitive answer. But that's all I wanted to know.
That's going to do it for us tonight. Katie, where can people go if they want to find you?
You can follow me all over the social medias, as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. If you want to see reactions to these episodes, they live on that YouTube channel. Voltron is Mondays at 7. Attack on Titan is Mondays at 8. Do the thing. It's wonderful.
And you can find me on Twitter at Mark B. Donica. I've been doing a whole bunch of stuff for a lot of varieties of people. Follow me for more information on that, I guess. Go to tpublic.com/theroosterteam. The Rooster Team. And check out some of our wares. Support our independent stuff. It's a new month. We might be posting something really soon. So Ooh. You should probably follow... We're on iTunes with... what the hell is
Welcome
it called?
To Welcome Vail. To Vail.
What's the show we do? We're on iTunes for Welcome to Vail, and we're trying to submit to other places too, but we're on SoundCloud, iTunes. You should probably follow it for various reasons.
And be sure to follow Stacey Shuttleworth at Stacey Shuttles across the social media. And I'm Megan. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you all next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.